Antibarya Devanaktam Anyasmara Pichayadai Namare Namare Mature Nanara Namaragayapi. Na, not. Anta, inside. Bahi, outside the home. Diva, during the daytime. Naktam, during the night. Anyasmat, from any others beyond Lord Brahma. Api, even. Cha, also. Anudai, by any weapons used within this material world. Na, nor. Bhuma, on the ground. Na, not. Ambare, in the sky. Mrityu, death. Na, not. Narai, by any men. Na, nor. Mrigai, by any animal. Api, also. Translation. Grant me that I not die within any residence or outside any residence, during the daytime or at night, nor on the ground or in the sky. Grant me that my death not be brought by any being other than those created by you, nor by any weapon, nor by any human being or animal. Purport by His Divine Grace, Sisi Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Hiranyakashipu was very much afraid of Vishnu's becoming an animal to kill him, because his brother had been killed by Vishnu when the Lord took shape of a boar. He was therefore very careful to guard against all kinds of animals. But even without taking the shape of an animal, Vishnu could kill him by hurling his Sudarshan Chakra, which can go anywhere without the Lord's physical presence. Therefore, Hiranyakashipu was careful to guard against all kinds of weapons. He guarded against all kinds of time, space, and countries because he was afraid of being killed by someone else in another land. There are many other planets, higher and lower, and therefore he prayed for the benediction of not being killed by any residents of any of these planets. There are three original deities, Brahma, Vishnu, and Maheshwara. Hiranyakashipu knew that Brahma would not kill him, but he also wanted not to be killed by Lord Vishnu or Lord Shiva. Consequently, he prayed for such a benediction. Thus, Hiranyakashipu thought himself securely protected from any kind of death caused by any living entity within this universe. He also carefully guarded against natural death, which might take place within his house or outside his house. Translation again, please repeat. Grant me that I not die within any residence or outside any residence during the daytime or at night, nor on the ground or in the sky. Grant me that my death not be brought by any being other than those created by you, nor by any weapon, nor by any human being or animal. Om Agnatinamandasya Gnanjana Salakaya Chakshuran Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shishetanya Manovistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupakadamaya Dadate Sapadantikam Hey Krishna Karana Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namastate Tapta Kanchana Gorange Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hare Priye Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Garadhar Shivasari Gaur Bhaktivinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Panchakalpatrebhyasya Kripa Sindhavevacha Patitanam Bhavanibhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Hiranyakashipu has been adoring Lord Brahma with prayers appropriate to offer to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And it's very interesting that Lord Brahma did not object to accepting these prayers, at least not apparently. And after glorifying Lord Brahma as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hiranyakashipu is now concluding his prayers with expressing the benediction he desires, which is his alternate attempt to ask for immortality. So, by his intelligence, he is trying to outsmart Lord Brahma, or ultimately outsmart Lord Vishnu, by seeking to not be killed by any conceivable manner of death, and thus thinking himself to become immortal. So we can see how deeply fear affects the living entities in this material world. The living beings in this material world are so accustomed to fear, being their constant companion in this world, that they've just grown accustomed to it and are not even aware of the depth of their fear. But here, we can see how Hiranyakashipu is revealing the deep fear that the living entities have living in this material world. And we all know that the greatest fear is the unknown. And therefore, the only means to overcome that fear is to become familiar with what's unknown. And basically, what is unknown to the conditioned soul is his own self and the Supreme Self and the relationship of love, which dispels all fear. Conditioned life also means the fear born of competition and the inevitable defeat in that competition. And what is the competition of the material world? It is the competition to be victorious in lording it over material nature. When the living entity who is born of the Chit Shakti, the internal potency of the Lord, which harmonizes everything in service to Krishna, when that pure jiva soul comes under the influence of the avidya shakti, the nescience, due to his envy, then the jiva soul who is marginal, who is born of the internal potency but subjected to the influence and the ignorance of the avidya, the shakti of the Lord, his very powerful shakti of ignorance, then he's bewildered. into thinking that he's the body and the intellect, and the designations he achieves with so much sacrifice and austerity in this world. Nobody can perform the kind of austerity that Hiranyakashipu did, but living entities in this world, they strive so hard and sacrifice so much and perform great tapasya to attain designations like PhD. And then they become very proud. And the most astonishing thing is that they think that they're the doer of the activities which are in actuality just carried out by material nature under the direction of Krishna. So the living entities, under the influence of this avidya shakti, they're competing to lord it over material nature. They're competing for lordship, but they don't even know who they are, and they don't know who the actual Lord is. Therefore, this fear can be alleviated only by knowledge. Bhoktaram yagatapasam sarva lokamaheshwaram suradam sarva bhutanam gyatam mam shantam richati shanti. Everyone is really, deep down in their hearts, yearning and striving for peace. Because happiness is born of peace of mind. There cannot be happiness without peace. And that peace can only be achieved by understanding that Lord Krishna is this the proprietor of all planets and demigods thereon, the enjoyer of all sacrifices and austerity, and the best friend, the well-wishing friend of all living entities, who are his parts and parcels. That is the only means to achieve peace. But in ignorance of this truth, the living entities are competing in this world. The outcome of the avidya influence is competition. Because not understanding that Krishna is the Lord, everyone else is competing to be the Lord. They may not be able to attain lordship over the universe like Hiranyakashipu did, but at least they strive for lordship over their own little realm of expertise or control or whatever. And from that control comes envy of others who will be competitors, and fear born of losing one's position, which inevitably everyone must in this material world. So to whatever degree envy persists in any relationship or any realm, that remains the material realm. And therefore, leaders in society, according to the Varnashram system, are meant to perform and also encourage all those in their realm of influence to perform sacrifice. Sacrifice for Vishnu must be performed, otherwise all one's endeavors simply entangle them more and more in the realm of nescience, with all the fear and envy and competition that is born of that avidya shakti. So, the great kings in Vedic times, like Lord Rishabhdev, he instructed his sons that one should not endeavor for sense gratification, which is available even to dogs and hogs with all their abominable tendencies. The human form of life is so rare and precious that one should strive for self-realization, which gives peace. Peace of mind, peace to the soul, and awards the eternal destination, which is the goal of human life. So from the higher perspective, even Brahma's life, Brahma's position, which was coveted by Hiranyakashipu, he wanted to usurp. He's worshipping Lord Brahma because he wants to usurp his position. And therefore, we see in this world, people use flattery to try to achieve position. And it's not just worship of the demigods, but gods and gurus abound in all spheres of material life. In the corporate realm, someone may endeavor to be a very good servant and a very great asset to the company. But his goal is to attain lordship. By serving someone, you come to understand their nature, their position, their sphere of influence, and it's very easy by that service to usurp their position. And therefore, worship of the demigods is condemned, because service to Krishna reveals the nature of Krishna and the nature of the living entity who is by nature part and parcel of Krishna. And from that relationship, love awakens within the heart. And that love for Krishna dispels all fear, dispels all ignorance. It reveals the actual nature of oneself, which is eternal part and parcel of Krishna, meant to serve him in love and find fearlessness in his protection, which reveals the actual immortal nature of the soul. Hiranyakashipu is making so many endeavors and performing so much tapasya and sacrifice to become immortal, but he already is immortal. Everyone's immortal. But we forget that due to the ignorance of identifying with the body and the mind and the achievements of this world, which has nothing to do with our actual nature and self and function. So, from the perspective of the Absolute, even the life of Brahma is so insignificant. Brahma's life, consisting of 311 trillion 40 million years, is less than one blink of the eyes of Lord Vishnu, Mahavishnu. And from the eternal perspective, this whole material world, with its vast duration of life, is insignificant. What is really of significance? Pataram pushpam palam toyam. Krishna says, if one offers me so much as a leaf, a flower, a little water, I accept that offering. And Krishna is accepting such a insignificant offering. He's not accepting the offering. He's accepting the love and devotion. That is an eternal asset to the living entity. Krishna never forgets the most insignificant offerings of love and devotion. And that is to the eternal benefit of one who makes that offering. Because ultimately, what is real? Krishna, Krishna's devotees, Krishna's holy names, the process of devotional service, these things are eternal. Everything else is illusory. It is real in the sense of being a real illusion, but an illusion by nature, being temporary, does not conform to Krishna's definition of reality, because it has a beginning and an end. It's temporary. So, in Vedic times, the kings, which also represents the duty of any leader, including father and mother, who are like the king and queen of the family, they have a duty to perform sacrifice and to inspire and instruct their dependents to perform sacrifice so that Krishna will be pleased. Because when Krishna is pleased, then there's eternal benefit for everyone who partakes in that offering, in that sacrifice, in that duty. And then, when Krishna is pleased, then all the members of whatever kingdom or family, the leader inspired that sacrifice for the pleasure of Vishnu, everyone will become satisfied. And when the living entities are satisfied, which they only can be in relationship to their source, Sri Krishna, when the living entities are satisfied, which they only can be by bhakti, then they don't compete, they don't fight, they don't conflict, but they cooperate. Understanding that cooperation for the pleasure of Guru and Krishna is the source of that satisfaction for which we're always yearning. And then they see the futility of competition for material designations and accommodations. And when people are satisfied, then they're not greedy. Greed is the source of the competition in this world, but greed can never satisfy. The universe is perfectly equipped to fulfill and satisfy everyone's legitimate needs, but it cannot satisfy anyone's greed. Because greed, like a blazing fire, the more you offer it, the more it burns and just dries up the heart. It makes it like a desert, which desperately is seeking fulfillment, but that can never be found in this material world. The illusion in the desert, called the mirage, just lures that animal who's dying of thirst to run faster and faster until he simply dies of thirst. We're thirsting for bhakti. That alone can satisfy the heart. And the more we try to seek satisfaction in material sense gratification, the more the heart will just be burning with envy and fear and greed, which destroys relationships. Loving relationships can really exist only between souls who are either free or striving to become free of envy. And the only means to become free of envy is to surrender to Krishna. To that surrender, giving up our practically eternal competition with Krishna for lordship. Surrender. Of course, surrender is a crude term, because usually surrender in this world means you're just overpowered by some enemy. And you give up the fight, seeing that it's going to cost your life. But surrender to Krishna is born of love. We're overpowered by his beauty, sweetness, and charm. And we want to take shelter of that spiritual nature. So we just give up the fight, give up our competition with Krishna. And then what is the result? Sharanagati is the appropriate term for surrender. Humility, dedication of the self, confidence that Krishna will surely protect us, accepting all things favorable for devotional service, rejecting things unfavorable. And what is the result? The youthful son of Nanda Maharaj hears the prayers of one who approaches him by this path. So Hiranyakashipu's motivation in worshipping Brahma is revealed here, where he seeks his benediction of... He couldn't get a benediction of immortality because Brahma said, I don't even have that. So then Hiranyakashipu made so many plans, made so many arrangements, and achieved Brahma's benediction that those arrangements to protect himself would be honored. But ultimately, that was the cause of his death, by the mercy of Lord Nrsingadev. So, the ideal society, be it the family unit, the temple complex, the nation, the world, is, and also the nature of fear and envy and competition is beautifully illustrated in the life of the ideal king, Prithu Maharaj. You know the story, King Anga performed a sacrifice and the demigods did not appear to accept the oblations. And he felt that his offerings were not being accepted, and therefore his life was useless. And the Brahmins told him that it's not because of any fault in this life, but in some previous life there is some defect, and now the reaction is coming, and therefore you don't have a son. So he wanted to achieve a son. So he performed a sacrifice to have a son, and that was fulfilled. But the son was Vena, cruel Vena. And then finally King Anga realized that it's better to have no son than such a cruel and wicked demon son. So he understood it was providence, it was Krishna's arrangement that he could just become detached. And then when King Anga took Vanaprastha and went to the forest, the citizens being without protection, the brahmanas, even though the ministers did not approve, installed Vena as the king to subdue all the thieves and powerful elements which would exploit the citizens. But that created more trouble because King Vena was so wicked and so envious that finally the brahmanas just had to kill him by the power, the potency of the Vedic mantras. And then they saw a huge dust storm arising, indicating that the thieves and rogues which were subdued by the power of Vena were now exploiting the innocent citizens. So they churned the body of Vena. From the lower portion they got Buhuka, and from his arms came Prithu Maharaj and his future wife, the Queen Archi. So when Prithu Maharaj was in the ceremony of his coronation, the Sutas, Magadhas, and Vandis, the professional reciters, storytellers, and professional, those who glorify, were glorifying him for the deeds he would perform in the future. Due to his empowerment, he stopped them and said, it's not appropriate to worship a jiva as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, nor to glorify one for what he might achieve in the future, which has not become manifest as of yet. But the brahmanas told him, no, keep glorifying him, because they knew that as a Shaktavish avatar, he would achieve such glorious deeds in the future. So, being coronated king, the citizens told them that we're starving. The earth is not sustaining us. And it is your duty as the king to rectify the situation. So Prithu Maharaj understood that it wasn't because the citizens were lazy and not performing their duties, but the earth was just not reciprocating. So he took his bow and arrow and aimed them at the earth, and she tried to flee everywhere. And seeing that there was no escape, she surrendered to Prithu Maharaj and said, why do you want to kill me? I'm a woman, a cow, and that's sinful. He said, because you are accepting the oblations of sacrifice and not reciprocating, that is sinful, and everyone is suffering accordingly. So I will punish you and destroy you and rectify the situation. So then it's very interesting how she expressed the truth of the matter. You know, when somebody comes and accuses you of something, the false ego is so prone to defend. If someone insults your reputation, your false ego wants to defend. And we know that to become disentangled from the three modes of material nature, we have to practice humility. But with humility is also a duty to truth. So Bhumi took the humble position, but she expressed the truth of the matter. It's not that I do not want to reciprocate by fulfilling the needs of the citizens, but the problem is that for so long I've been exploited by the demons that the seeds and the herbs and the grains within me, which were placed there originally by Brahma to nurture, to sustain the living entities, they become impotent. Because I've restrained them, I've held them within me for so long because they are being exploited by demons. And now that Vena is killed, but it's been such a long time that the seeds and the grains are no longer fertile. So if you arrange a suitable calf, then I, Bhumi, as a cow, and also a suitable milkman, then I will, out of affection, I will fulfill everyone's needs. So hearing this, both seeing the submission, the surrender of Bhumi, and hearing the truth of the matter, that she wasn't willingly restraining her gifts anymore. She had been for so long due to being exploited, but in the long duration of exploitation, the seeds and the grains placed within her by Brahma had become impotent. For so long in storage, they could no longer sprout. So, understanding the actual matter, Maharaj Prithu had Swayambhuvamanu become a calf. And using his palms as the bucket, milked, Prithu Maharaj milked the earth of the grains and the seeds and the herbs, and they were potent. And Brihaspati became the calf for the rishis, and with a pot made of the mind, milked the earth of Vedic knowledge, which purifies the mind, the senses, the word, and the heart. And then all the different living entities, the different representatives of the different living entities, right on down to the demons and the scorpions, had a representative come forward in the form of a calf, and with a suitable milk pot, milked the earth, and achieved all their needs. And the earth became very fruitful, very bountiful, like a Kamadhenu cow. And everything was flourishing, practically and spiritually. So, seeing the fertility of the earth, just like a cow who becomes fresh and out of affection, fulfills the needs, because Bhumi is a great devotee. Mother Earth gives the bodies for all her children and sustains them. Practically and spiritually, if we simply comply with her standards. And she's a devotee, so her standard is that we try to work harmoniously in sacrifice for the pleasure of Krishna. So seeing how everything had not only become rectified, but very bountiful, Prithu Maharaj was encouraged and inspired, and he wanted to work for more progress and benefit for the living entities, practically but more so spiritually. So he inaugurated the sacrifice of 100 ashwamedhas, horse sacrifice, which is so difficult to perform. Only an emperor who is accepted as such by all the kings of the world is even in a position, and it takes tremendous cooperation and tremendous facility and wealth and years of planning and orchestration, because if the horse dies in the sacrifice, everyone is plagued with the sin of killing a living entity. But if the sacrifice is successful, and they wouldn't perform it unless they were confident that the brahmanas were competent, that the Vedic hymns would restore new life to that old horse. And they would see before their eyes, the old horse would achieve a new youthful form. So he started performing these horse sacrifices, and everything just became increasingly bountiful, practically and more so spiritually. And the earth was rejuvenated, and all the living entities were uplifted, and the envy and fear that had prevailed during the reign of King Vena was transformed. But when Prithu Maharaj had performed 99 horse sacrifices, then Indra, who was glorified for being the only one to have ever performed 100 horse sacrifices, even though he's a great devotee, he reveals to us the disastrous effects of maintaining material desires and attachments due to position and fame. He did not want to be equaled and surpassed as his being glorious as the only one who had ever performed 100 horse sacrifices. So when the time came for the 100th sacrifice, Indra stole the horse and was fleeing through outer space. And Prithu Maharaj's son, Vijitashva, took off after him and was going to shoot him with his arrow. And then Indra, out of fear, took the form of a sannyasi. And Vijitashva, such a cultured prince, offered his obeisances to the sannyasi and just let him go. And then Atrimuni, presiding over the sacrifice, what do you do? He's not a sadhu. He's a thief. So when they prepared the next horse sacrifice, again, Indra stole the horse, fled into outer space. Vijitashva pursued him. Indra assumed the form of another sannyasi. Vijitashva offered his obeisances, came back, and Atrimuni said, no, what are you doing? Don't offer your obeisances. He's not a sadhu. He's a thief. He should be killed. So then dense darkness made everything, covered everything. Nobody could see. In the confusion, Indra stole the horse again, fled into outer space. Vijitashva pursued. He took the form of another kind of sadhu. Vijitashva offered his obeisances. Atrimuni says, no, don't do that. Kill him. He's a thief. But Vijitashva was so cultured. Every time he saw a sadhu, he paid his obeisances. He couldn't bring himself to kill him. And this happened over and over and over again. Finally, Prithu Maharaj took up his bow and arrow, and he was going to kill him. Because he understood that every time this thief, Indra, out of his fear and envy, takes the form of a sadhu, he gives birth to another apasampradaya, which is going to plague the world for long time to come. As we see, even when Srila Prabhupada came to the West preaching, even the Godbrothers who went West before him, they told Srila Prabhupada, we don't know how to answer this question. They ask, what are you doing? Why are you coming? Coming to beg? Coming to take from us? This bad reputation which befell the sadhus began with Indra. So Prithu Maharaj was so intolerant, he was going to kill him. Then Indra became invisible and just disappeared. Prithu Maharaj came back with the horse. But the sages knew this is just going to keep recurring. So Prithu Maharaj was going to pursue Indra, but the sages told him, no, it's not your position to go kill Indra. It's your position to perform this sacrifice for the betterment and upliftment and prosperity, practically, but more so spiritually, of the world. So we'll perform a separate sacrifice with a separate fire and chant mantras, which forces Indra to come out of wherever he's hiding, and he'll be burned in the fire. So they began that sacrifice, and they were just ready to chant the mantras to burn Indra to ashes, and Brahma appeared and said, this is not going right. And he told Maharaj Prithu, you should just surrender your aspiration to perform 100 horse sacrifice, as meritorious and glorious as it is. He was just doing it for the spiritual welfare of the world. But Brahma told him that when, by providence, something is going in a certain way, and you try to control it, or defend it, or reverse it, providence, which means ultimately the will of the Lord, then you just further the nescience and entanglement. This is a providential situation. Indra is so fearful that his reputation will be diminished, that every time he assumes the form of a sadhu to escape chastisement, he gives birth to another apasambhadaya, which is going, and this is going to plague the world for a long time to come. And why should you want to kill Indra? He's an empowered representative of the Lord, as are you, Prita Maharaj. You have to work cooperatively. And as glorious and meritorious as your desire is to perform 100 horse sacrifices, we can see that by providence, it's having a counterproductive effect. It's creating disharmony amongst the servitors of Godhead. And therefore, you should just be satisfied with performing 99 sacrifices. And that surrender. And what is it? You know, you're sacrificing the reputation. You would become glorious. Not that Prita Maharaj was attached to that glory, but Brahma is making the point that by sacrificing your own interests, however glorious and meritorious it may be, for the higher principle of harmony and unity within the theistic community, you understand and you honor what is most important in the eyes of the Lord. That his servants cooperate. And therefore Srila Prabhupada, in his final pastimes, was emphasizing above and beyond everything and anything, cooperation for the sake of maintaining and pushing on his movement. So you see, historically speaking, how many times different devotees will have different ideas, which are all meritorious and glorious in fulfilling Srila Prabhupada's vision. But if the consequence is conflict and disunity and disharmony, then everything is destroyed. So, harmony and loving, true, substantial loving relationships necessitate sacrifice. And the ultimate sacrifice being that performed, being doing the needful to maintain the harmony and unity of Srila Prabhupada's mission. So, and this archetype is so beautifully, perfectly, and completely demonstrated in the life and pastimes of Prita Maharaj. So, Prita Maharaj accepted Brahma's advice and took the bath, which signifies the completion of the long series of sacrifices that he accepted, that he would only perform 99. And just when he was concluding that series of sacrifice, Lord Vishnu appeared in the sacrificial arena and told him that I am so pleased by your sacrifice, and you're forfeiting your worthy aspiration to perform 100. I'm very pleased that you sacrificed your own aspiration, as glorious and meritorious as it was, for the higher principle of harmony and unity. And I also wish that you would forgive Indra, who appeared with Vishnu. And Prita Maharaj, seeing Indra very repentant, bowing down before him. He picked him up and embraced him. His heart was free of any envy or enmity due to his pure devotional service. And then a wonderful thing happened. Maharaj Prithu's eyes were so filled with tears and his voice was faltering that he was having difficulty seeing the form of the Lord and offering prayers. And even though Lord Vishnu wanted to depart, he could not do so because he was so attached to the prayers of Prithu Maharaj, so loving and devotional. And then Lord Vishnu, who, like the demigods, does not, his lotus feet do not touch the earth when he comes. But at the conclusion of Prithu Maharaj's prayers, Lord Vishnu, his lotus feet came down and blessed and touched the earth. And then he had to lean against Garuda because he wasn't used to having his feet on the ground. So to get used to it, he had to, you know, places, he had to lean on Garuda. So the earth became so blessed. But what is the significance in this Leela? That when we sacrifice our own aspirations for the higher principle of unity and harmony, then Krishna, he reveals himself and he blesses and sanctifies everything in a higher way. So cooperation, according to Srila Prabhupada's definition, doesn't mean you just make by some managerial expertise, make a win-win situation and everybody works together for something that they all agree upon. It means we work together for something even if we don't agree, or even if it wasn't our way of doing things, for the higher principle of unity and harmony. In fulfilling Srila Prabhupada's instruction is that we work cooperatively, then the atmosphere becomes sanctified by Krishna's pleasure, which awards the highest benedictions in loving relationships. It becomes the spiritual world. So our temples are not going to attract people just by being very beautiful, because there are so many beautiful places and buildings in the world. But the thing that's going to attract people and transform hearts is seeing the blessings of Krishna, which is achieved and testified by loving relationships in harmony for the sake of the prime benediction for humanity at large, which spreads the rays of the benediction moon, meaning the only sacrifice which really works in this age of Sankirtan Yajna. So Lord Vishnu requested Prithu Maharaj, please forgive Indra. And when Lord Vishnu was just preparing to depart, and he told Prithu Maharaj, I want to offer you some benediction. What do you like? What would you... He said, please bless me with 1,000,000 ears so I can hear more and more your glories in the association of devotees. And by that hearing and in that association, bless me with service to these servants who are so dear to you. And let my crown always be adorned with the dust of the lotus feet of the servants of the servants. That is the only benediction I desire. So Lord Vishnu benedicted Prithu Maharaj with that blessing before departing. And that blessing continues to benedict this world with such an example of how to achieve the blessings of Krishna. Krishna is attracted to harmony, to loving relationships, and his blessings just vitalizes and substantiates those loving relationships in that spirit of harmony, and that can attract others to surrender to Krishna. and become the servants of the servants, by which they can overcome the fear of material existence, by the self-realization, by the illumination of the holy name, which is the only sacrifice, the only means of real self-realization, the only means to conquer over envy and enmity in this world, through sacrificing false ego on the altar of the holy name, in coming together, putting aside all differences, and harmonizing in the one thing we all have in common, that we're all servants of the servants, and is proclaimed by the congregational chanting of Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Otherwise, a competitive spirit will just make unpalatable dealings, even amongst devotees, and no one will become attracted, no matter what facilities or what sacrifices we perform, if the relationships are unpalatable, unharmonious, conflicting, it will not satisfy anyone. Our hearts, you know, we may achieve great success on the practical level, but our hearts will be burning like a desert. Our hearts are only satisfied and fruitful when there's loving relationships, as testified by Bhumi herself. She become dried up and impotent because of the long exploitation during the reign of King Vena. So, to the degree that we humble ourselves for the sake of the higher principle of honoring Srila Prabhupada's wish that we work together to push on this movement, that will attract Krishna's blessings. So, but that necessitates sacrifice. And what is transcendental competition that we've heard about in the past? Transcendental competition means you do your very best not to outdo others, but to inspire others to do better. Srila Prabhupada explained that he prayed that all his disciples would outdo him in his preaching. Not that anyone would think they could ever outdo Srila Prabhupada, but that was his mood of doing his very best to inspire others to do better. And what is the Vaikuntha mood when we're surpassed by someone else? It was beautifully demonstrated in Mahaprakash, when Lord Gauranga finally revealed that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he was calling all the devotees, and before all the other devotees, revealing pastimes which he had engaged with them before they understood that he was that Godhead. He was revealing intimate pastimes by which nobody else knew about, by which they understood he is the omniscient personality of Godhead. And then he would hear their prayers and offer benedictions. And whenever he offered any benediction to any devotee, all the other devotees would become so joyful that they would just cry out in great exultation, Jai Jai Mahaprabhu Ki Jai. And when Kolavet Sridhar, we were discussing last week or whenever, when he was offered empires, kingdoms, but such opulence, everything conceivable was offered to Kolavet Sridhar, was the poorest of the poor. But he prayed only to always remain the servant of the servants. And when Lord Gauranga, he blessed them, and everyone was joyful. But when the subsequent pastime of drinking the water from his broken iron pot filled the devotees with such joy that they were just rolling on the ground and crying in ecstasy and dancing in great jubilation for a period which expanded by the will of the Lord to last several kalpas, several lifetimes of Brahma. The joy of the devotees at seeing their sacrifice surpassed by the humility and love and devotion of Kolavet Sridhar. The devotees were so joyful that they did not want that night to end. So joyful it was that Krishna expanded that one night into several lifetimes of Brahma, lasting hundreds and trillions of years. And when the sun finally did rise, everything was revealed in a totally different light. The city of Navadvipa was transformed from its previous glory as an emporium of learning, with all the pride that accompanied that, to the emporium of Sankirtan, with all the humility and harmony and sweetness and beauty and charm and loving relationships which foster Harinam Sankirtan and which are preserved and immortalized by that sacrifice and surrender of Harinam Sankirtan, the only sacrifice in this age of Kali, the only sacrifice which has the means of killing the demoniac mentality while preserving the life and restoring the life of all transcendental knowledge, which reveals the ocean of transcendental bliss and awards a taste for that which we're always yearning, devotional service, the fruit of the seed of devotion contained within the holy name of Krishna. Thank you very much. Are there any questions or comments? Yes. How do you tell if it's providence or just your own laziness? That's a most worthy question to contemplate. How to know if something is not working out, if it's providence or just our own laziness or insincerity. That will be revealed. Such a crucial, since providence is ultimately the will of the Lord, that will be revealed the way the will of the Lord always is through Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. When I say Sadhu, it means the collective Vaishnavas. In the association of Vaishnavas, the will of Krishna becomes revealed. When I say association of Vaishnavas, it doesn't mean just, you know, the outer appearance of dress and tilak. It means the cooperative spirit to work harmoniously, to perpetuate the mission of Srila Prabhupada. In that association, the collective assembly of devotees will be the means which reveals whether a certain trend is providence or just our own laziness or insincerity. Another way to decipher is when something goes into the realm of over-endeavor. Over-endeavor for things which should be easily achieved is an impediment. That means that it looked like a worthy thing, but it's become an over-endeavor. So that's another indication that it's providence, and we just have to adjust accordingly. But even that, over-endeavor, you can't really tell if it's just your own insincerity, laziness, or providence without the will and the will of the Lord, which is expressed through the collective Vaishnavas. That will help us. And in your own sincerity, the super soul within your own heart. But these things all work together. Guru, Sadhu, Shastra, the Lord within the heart, and the outer manifestation of the Guru. When these things all begin to verify the same message, that will determine whether some obstacle is the will of Providence, and we just have to adjust accordingly, or our own insincerity, which means we have to fortify ourselves more strongly to overcome. So that's why, that's one reason why association of devotees is so crucial, because that's how the will of the Lord is revealed. And it's got everything to do with harmony. When that harmony is disrupted, that means that something is wrong. It's either some lack of sincerity on someone's part or Providence. And the answer will be revealed through that same collective assembly of servants through whom the Lord reveals himself and expresses his will and desire. Okay. Anything else? Yes. Indra became repentant because he was standing behind Lord Vishnu, hearing his instructions to Prithu Maharaj, hearing his own Lord express that, look, Indra, you can't handle this, so you adjust your sacrifice in such a way to encourage him. That made him repentant. Hearing Lord Vishnu acknowledging that Indra's got this problem. I mean, I'm paraphrasing now. But Lord Vishnu he was telling Prithu Maharaj that, Indra's so fearful. He's so fearful because of your series of sacrifices that he can't control himself. And every time he steals the horse and assumes the form of a sadhu, he gives birth to another apasampradaya. So your sacrifice is having adverse effects because he is so fearful. So please just adjust your sacrifice to accommodate him. So hearing how the Lord himself had to come and tell Prithu Maharaj that what you're doing is too much for Indra, so you please just adjust your own sacrifice in order to accommodate him. When Indra saw how Lord Vishnu and his empowered Shaktavish avatar, Prithu Maharaj, had to work out an agreement just to accommodate his service with his fearful mentality born of his insecurity because of his material attachments, he felt so horrible that with great repentance he begged forgiveness from Prithu Maharaj, and Prithu Maharaj he embraced him. There was no enmity on his part. And that, so hearing Lord Vishnu's words and the compromise accepted by Prithu Maharaj, it just made him feel so repentant. Because before he was just so overcome with his own fear, born of the imminent loss of his reputation as being the only one who had ever achieved this 100th sacrifice. He couldn't even see what was going on. He was so blinded by his own fear and attachments, he couldn't even see. But when he saw the exchange between Lord Vishnu and Prithu Maharaj, he became very sober. He saw how his attachment was actually disrupting the service and sacrifice to the Lord. He became repentant. And when he begged forgiveness, and Lord Vishnu told Prithu Maharaj, you must forgive him, Prithu Maharaj had no envy in his heart, no enmity. He happily embraced Indra, and that embrace testifies the empowering effects of loving relationships, that it dispelled the fear in his heart, and it dispelled his grief, that even though he had his attachments and his fear and his envy, the devotees and the Lord were willing to overlook that if they just continued working together. So hearing the Lord's speech made him repentant, and being embraced by Prita Maharaj revived his service attitude and proper humility. Which just shows that everything is adjusted by the Lord if we sincerely do our best, even with our shortcomings. If we're sincerely doing our best and adjusting that harmony and unity be preserved, then Krishna compensates. He himself compensates for whatever shortcomings there are, as long as we're sincere and trying to work together. Anything else? Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.